Okay, then, oh, I've gone over time. So I better stop now. Then tomorrow, or no, tomorrow we will, afternoon is off. The Tuesday, I'll talk a bit about the canons. You know, because you started having the development of, you know, the Pali canon, Chinese canon, Tibetan canon. And then we'll get in a little bit more into some of the innovations of Tantra, of Mahayana and then of Tantra, you know, and talk a little bit about how you can see how if you start out with the Pali and then go to the Mahayana sutras, you can see how the Mahayana sutras built on certain things that were said in the Pali. And then when you see Vajrayana, then you can see that it's, you know, it's not that big of a jump from Mahayana to Vajrayana in terms of some things and, you know, this development of ideas. You know, so that's it. Any questions? Yeah.
I have a question. In that first schism between the Stavirs and the Mahasanghikas, what happens after that? Is it like, it's not like a debate, like somebody wins and everybody else has to convert. Do they just go off? And then were the Mahasanghikas invited back to the second council, or was the second council only the Stavirs? Like, what happens then when they have...
Okay, well, let me see. Yeah, because it seems like, you know, as far as I understand, you know, some of them say that schism, there wasn't a, mm-hmm. it wasn't at the time of a council. So let's see if I have anything here. All I have is that different subsects came from the Mahasanghika, mm-hmm. partly as a result of doctrinal disputes, partly because of geographical separation. But then something else I read too said that kind of Mahasanghika in some ways fizzled out as a distinct school. Mm-hmm. So I don't really know. It seems like that one, you know, they may have had just different views and kind of kept...
Geographically went separate.
Yeah, maybe, you know, or they kept separate from mm-hmm. each other. And then, actually I have something else. It gets really, really technical. Mm-hmm. I read there's this Australian monk who sent me this beautiful thing that he could read, but it's so much detail that you can't remember it. But I can't remember it. But you know, it was like each school, after you had that first split, then within different schools, they would start debating different doctrinal things, and you had further division into
like
different subsections.
Flowchart thing of how it all.
Yeah. Yeah, so it appeared that they, you know, people just had their different ideas and kept their different ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
yeah, and developed different ideas.
They just went off with
the yeah, it wasn't like they came back and made up and they all believed mm-hmm. the same thing. Because, I mean, as soon as you have human mm-hmm. beings, how are you ever going to get them all to believe the same thing?
But then did they come back for these other councils?
Oh.
Or, like, then when they had the second and
the second council. Okay. Okay. I have a feeling that it was probably the Staviras that were the actual second, the second council. No, the third council, the one at Pataliputra. Mm-hmm. With a King Ashoka, mm-hmm. it was probably the Staviras, but I can maybe check
kind of
on that.
Curious, like, who was considered like the Buddhist Sangha then that was allowed, you know, that was sort of
yeah.
That.
Well, I would think it must have been them because it was during the time of King Ashoka, mm-hmm. and it was that tradition that went down to Ceylon. Yeah. So maybe by that time the others had moved to a different area. I mean, it seemed like Buddhism, the Srivastavadas, they lived up in Kashmir. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, then you have the whole area of Gandhara, which is the mountainous area of Pakistan and Afghanistan. That all became Buddhist. So, I mean, once those people were up there, I mean, what the people are doing down at where King Ashoka is, they have no idea. You know, there's no email and fax machine, so they're probably too busy, you know, factionalizing amongst themselves. Yeah.
Because okay. I heard once that the only Vinaya schools that survived came from this Dravira tradition, and the Vinaya schools of the like from that first split of Dravira's died out because they were like too liberal, and only the very strictest of the Vinaya schools. It was like somebody proving that it's like better to be strict than loose, and saying here only the ones that are offshoots of that one.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't remember the seeing Mahasanghika as any of the 18 sub-schools. So I don't know what happened to them. But then in some renditions, like the Dharmaguptaka one, you know, is seen as a branch of this Dvira, but in other ones it's some other ways. So. It's hard to tell.
I had a question from yesterday. You were talking about lapses. And you said that it would be a lapse telling a layperson that a sangha member created a big offense.
Yeah.
Is that where they really created the offense? Not versus the time where you may have said that somebody did something that they didn't do.
Okay. Well, it's if you accuse somebody of doing something that they didn't do, that's a sangha vicesa. So that's a very, very severe one. You know, so that's whether you accuse them to the Sangha or to the lay people, you're doing that as a Sangha vicesa. So this is probably if somebody's done it, but then you just go and gossip with all the lay people and, you know, oh, this monk, blah, 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 you know. And I think the reason why that's prohibited is it makes the lay people lose faith, and then it also, you know, whenever people gossip and talk like that, then it's going to just create more discord in the Sangha. It's just going to, you know, be a mess. It doesn't mean that, you know, you cover things up either. Because, you know, I mean, you see like in Thailand in recent years when they've had various scandals, then, you know, it's out there in the newspaper. I mean, yeah, the Tibetans don't have so many newspapers, so they don't print their scandals. Gets printed in English in the West, you know. Yeah, but you know, you look at the Tibetans, they don't have daily newspapers. Yeah, so, yeah.
I said they all have cell phones.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think the idea is just to stay away from that kind of malicious gossip that might harm somebody's faith. Yeah. But then, you know, on the other hand, you know, when we had this conference of Western Buddhist teachers, this was in 93, and His Holiness was saying when people misbehave, this was in the context of Buddhist teachers, not specifically Sangha. He was saying Buddhist teachers, and he also said most of the complaints he received were about lay teachers. He said, you know, you should tell people because, you know, it's a way of exerting pressure on these people to behave properly.
Is the Prasangika Majjhimaka school considered the highest by all four Tibetan schools?
Well, depends who you talk to.
Yeah, I've been wondering about that for a while.
Yeah.
It seems like Majjhimaka is considered the highest.
Majjhimaka is considered the highest, okay. Now, what's interesting is if you read what the four different Tibetan schools believe is Prasangika, they have different beliefs of what they think the Prasangika believe. Okay? You know, because like Geshe Gyamso, and his Kagyu teacher, what he says the Prasangikas believe is very different than what the Galupas say the Prasangikas believe. But then His Holiness will say, actually, all four Tibetan schools, you know, adhere to the Prasangika view. But maybe what they call, maybe what they call their view isn't Prasangika, but His Holiness considers it to be Prasangika. But then when you study the different things, I mean, you really have to, it gets fairly confusing. You know, about do they really all have the same view? You know, His Holiness can understand all four schools, and sometimes, especially when he's teaching Mahamudra, he'll often give a discourse talking about how, you know, if you look at it this way, from this school, it's the same as looking at it from this way in this school, even though they have different words and different vocabulary. You know? Then there's also this issue of, you know, do the people from the different traditions now actually have the same view as people earlier on in their traditions did? Okay, like the present Nyingma masters, do they have the same view as Mipham did, for example? Or has the view changed? Does everybody have the same view now as the Kargyus, as, you know, Mark and Milarepa? You know, I don't know. Yeah.
My other question was something I've noticed when I was studying Chinese Buddhism. It seemed like there's a lot of mind-only influence.
Oh yeah, mind-only is very, very big in Chinese Buddhism, and you can see why, because Buddhism went to China much earlier than it went to Tibet. It started going to China in the 1st century BC, okay? And then in the early century CE, it was really there. So the mind-only teachings with the Sangha started in the 4th century. So they became very popular. So actually the Chinese canon, it has, this is what I was going to talk about tomorrow, I'm talking about today. The Chinese canon is it's huge, and it has a lot of what's in the Pali canon. The Pali canon has 5 agamas. The Pali's call it Nikayas. The Chinese canon has 4 of those. Because China, you know, Buddhism went from India to China so early that when when it was the heyday of the Pali tradition in India, that's what was there for them to bring to China. So the Chinese canon has all, you know, 4 of the 5 Nikayas or Agamas. The Tibetans have much less of that literature. Okay? The Chinese have, I think it's 5 of the Vinaya systems in their canon. The Tibetans only have 1, you know, because Buddhism went to Tibet so much later than it went to China. Also, when you have like the Madhyamaka school in China, but you know, Madhyamaka became a school much later on, you know, even though Nagarjuna lived before a Sangha, he didn't call himself Madhyamaka. Okay, Madhyamaka only came about like once he got to Chandrakirti, which was a couple of, you know, 2-3 centuries after a Sangha. So by that time, so many things had gone to China already that they were busy practicing what they already had. So the China, in terms of Madhyamaka teachings, they have, they have one of the same texts of Nagarjuna's that the Tibetans have, but then their other Madhyamaka scriptures are different than what the Tibetans have. Because the Tibetans, Buddhism came there so much later, so that's why Chandrakirti became so popular. Because actually Chandrakirti, when he was in India, he was not very popular at all. He didn't become popular in India until maybe 3 centuries after he passed away. You know, when he was alive, Chandrakirti is somebody else. It was only later that people saw his brilliance and he became very widespread. And actually, you know, when a Sangha brought the teachings to Tibet, this was in the late 10th, early 11th century, he brought the view of the, not of the Prasangikas, but of the Svatantrikas. You know, and it wasn't until later on that Chandrakirti was even translated into Tibetan. He brought, you know, the Madhyamaka, but it was the Svatantrika Madhyamaka view as propounded by Baba Viveka. You know, and Chandrakirti's view wasn't translated into Tibetan until later, you know, after Atisha. Yeah, so Atisha was teaching the Svatantrika Majjhimika instead of the Prasangika Majjhimika view. But actually it was the Tibetans that formed those two schools. Mm-hmm. In ancient India, they didn't have the term Svatantrika Majjhima, Majjhimika, and Prasangika Majjhimika. It was the Tibetans who looked back on the Indians and said, oh, Baba Vekka and Chandrakirti, they believed really different things. They have different schools. But I think at the time in India, they didn't use those terms at all. Okay, so you know, Chandrakirti became very popular in Tibet because he was popular in India during the time of, you know, when the teachings were going from India to Tibet. But because he wasn't so popular in India during the time and when the teachings were going from India to China, you don't have, you know, Chandrakirti in the Chinese canon.